Hello and welcome to the Money Nerds Podcast, where owning a calculator, budgeting your money, and having a net worth is actually cool. I'm your host, Whitney Hansen, and each week I'll be chatting with inspiring people to learn their secrets to financial success. Now let's dive into the show.
Hey guys, welcome back to the show. Today's episode, it was a ton of fun. I got to sit down with one of my friends, Jessica Morehouse, to learn all about her secrets to financial success. Before we dive into her story, which is really impressive and very amazing, I want to share with you guys my favorite segment of the day, which is our hashtag Money Wins. This money win is really cool because it shows you the power of doing the little things. This one comes from Joe in our private Facebook group, Manage Your Money Like a Boss, which you are more than welcome to attend. It's a fun community of like-minded people all rallying around personal finance and being better with your money. Joe says, I was selected for an RTI survey and took the time to fill it out. It didn't even take an hour and I got paid $30. Not bad for walking around money. Hashtag money win. I think that's really cool because how many times do we ignore those surveys or those little things that are offered to us, but we just immediately disregard them? So I'm glad that Joe was able to take advantage of that. So Joe, you're a rock star. Keep up the great work and enjoy the $30 coffee or whatever you decide to use it for. All right, let's dive into today's episode. Jessica Morehouse. This gal is a millennial personal finance expert. She's an award-winning blogger, and she's also the host of the Mo Money podcast, founder of the Millennial Money Meetup, and co-founder of Rich and Fit. So this is all really amazing stuff. She's a very impressive lady. But in this episode, we got a really raw, unfiltered look into her life, which I think is pretty cool. She aims to show people how to live a balanced, fulfilling life by managing their money and improving their health. Ever since she discovered the transformative powers of financial literacy, her mission has been to teach others how to take control of their lives by taking control of their money. In this episode, we talk about her website that began as a hobby, a book that tremendously impacted her financial life, breaking through the starving artist mentality while she was in film school, why she's not a fan of debt. We go into a lot of detail on that too. What she's uncovered as a secret to success from interviewing over 100 people on her podcast. She shares with us how to audit your financial picture. So where do you actually begin? And shares with us an inside scoop to how she manages her money with her husband. Guys, you are in for a real treat. As you notice throughout this episode too, towards the end, we talk about her new boot camp that is relaunching again at the end of September. So you've got a little bit of time to sign up. It's Rich and Fit Boot Camp. So if you want to check that out, make sure you go to jessicamorehouse.com. Guys, I'm so excited to introduce you to my friend, Jessica Morehouse. Hey guys, welcome back to another episode. Today I'm joined by my Canadian friend, Jessica Morehouse. Jessica was part of the Money Summit as well, so you likely got to know a little bit more about her and her style of teaching, which I fell in love with. Jess, thanks so much for joining the show. I'm so excited to get to chat with you today.
Thanks for having me. I am so excited. And thanks again for having me for the Money Summit. That was so much fun.
Your session, I have to say, was probably one of the most popular. I still get emails about how much they loved you. So I was
Oh my gosh, that's so cool.
I know. It was so great. I loved it. But it was really good. You shared some really great advice.
I shared a lot of information. Looking back, like, wow, that was a lot of stuff. But
you
hopefully
owned it.
It's true. There is a lot of stuff. What can you do?
It's true. Well, that's what I'm excited about too, because all of that information that you unpacked during the summit, I know you've experienced firsthand. And so that's why I'm so excited to chat with you about your personal story today. So take us back before JessicaMorehouse.com. How the hell did you actually get started into personal finance?
Sure. So yeah, before JessicaMorehouse.com, I had the genius idea to create a blog called MoMoneyMoHouses.com. Looking back, I'm like, what was I thinking? That's such a silly name. But at the time, I thought it was hilarious. And I really just started, a personal finance blog as kind of a hobby, something to do that was kind of a creative outlet for me. I wanted to learn digital marketing too for my job. And this was a way to kind of learn it on my own time and have a reason to kind of write consistently and get better at writing. Because I have a you know, creative background. I have a film degree. And so I really like telling stories and writing and stuff like that. So this was kind of my way of kind of doing that after I graduated and did a complete career switch, which was not in filmmaking at all, but I worked in sales and marketing. So it was kind of for me just a way to kind of keep myself accountable and, you know, get better at writing and digital marketing. And also I just like started to get really interested in personal finance, especially since, you know, I graduated university. I had a little bit of student debt and I really had no clue what I was doing. I had some pretty good just natural skills with money, but I didn't have a good foundation at all because I never talked about money with my parents or friends or anything like that. And so when I kind of got introduced to, you know, kind of typical for a Canadian, the first book that you'll probably be introduced to is called The Wealthy Barber. It is actually the most popular book in Canada.
I've never heard of it.
Still to this day. Yeah, I think it came out in the 80s. And basically it's by this guy, David Chilton. And he wrote this book that really talks about kind of the key points of personal finance and saving and investing, but he wrote it in a way that it wasn't just an informational book. It was a narrative. So there's characters. One of them is this barber who was having a conversation with one of his customers. And it's just like a very interesting, creative way to kind of talk about these important issues that we all have to deal with. So I read that, fell in love with it. I'm like, oh, that is actually really cool. And I felt very empowered by the idea that if I, you know, take control of my money and learn these things that are completely learnable, they're accessible, anyone can learn these things, that I could actually not be broke all my life and actually attain some of the things that I never thought I'd be able to. I, you know, had this idea, especially being in film school, that I was going to be this poor filmmaker all my life. And then, you know, once I decided to kind of switch careers, move to Vancouver, a very expensive city, and, you know, kind of start a different job, I was also still broke, making like hardly any money. And I just felt poor, like I was, you know, from poor student to poor non-student. I'm like, am I going to be poor all my life?
This sucks.
So this sucks. I can't. Yeah. And so when I started kind of reading more books and discovering there's personal finance blogs out there, I'm like, oh, I definitely want to start my own blog. I want to kind of get into the conversation and get to know these people too. And that's just kind of how it all kind of began. And now, I mean, I've been blogging. I still am a bit amazed. I've been blogging about personal finance for over 6 years. You wouldn't think that there's that much to talk about, but apparently there is.
Do you primarily stick to just money topics, or do you get a little bit into lifestyle, life hack kind of stuff as well?
Definitely about, yeah, absolutely. Like it's definitely evolved. When it was just, you know, Mo Money Mo Houses, it was mainly about me, my journey. And it was kind of not a diary, but a little bit, it was quite personal. And as I kind of rebranded to just jessicamorehouse.com, you'd think it would actually be more personal because it has my name on it, but it's actually a little bit less personal. I do talk about myself, but it's more, the focus is more on helping others that kind of land on my part of the internet. And less about me, cause I feel like I've talked about myself to death. So it does kind of talk a little bit about, you know, key things you need to know about money that you may not have thought about, answers to, you know, very common questions. And then also I do talk about, you know, kind of lifestyle. Like I recently just did a blog post and video about my recent trip to Montreal and how I, you know, saved money to do it, how I did it on the cheap and how you can do it as well. Because money is really, it's not just like this little financial, you know, corner. It really is, when you look at it, it's kind of in every pocket of your life.
Oh yeah. And if you fail with money, it does, it trickles over, exactly what you're saying. Mm-hmm. I want to go back a little bit further. So one of the things that I thought was super cool about you is you started working at a really early age. So
I did.
What were you doing and why did you start working so early?
The reason I started working so early was because I never got an allowance. So the only money that I ever got my hands on when I was younger was, if I got birthday money or, some money at Christmas for a gift. My parents didn't, I don't think they honestly could afford to give allowances. They had, you know, three kids. And we lived, you know, a very kind of modest, frugal life. And so I wanted to have more money cause I wanted to keep up with my friends who, you know, were out and about every weekend. And so I knew I needed to kind of earn a living. So, you know, in middle school, of course, I did the typical thing, did some babysitting, but I hated it. It was just not my thing. And so when I was at the age where I could actually get a real job, which was the age of 15, I started applying for jobs and my first job was, as a sales associate at the Gap during Christmas time.
Sweet.
It was awesome. It was not. I was terrible at it, but I didn't know, like, it was my first job. I had no idea what I was doing, selling khakis. And pretty much. And after that, then my next job was working at a fast food restaurant called A&W. I was there for like 3 years, surprisingly.
Nice.
And then the number of jobs I've probably had is probably incredible because I did start at 15. So I don't know, at least 10 to 15. Like, it's hard to keep track, but I just did whatever I could. So I basically always had a job that was earning me money. And a big reason too was when I was in high school, not only did I want to keep up my friends, I wanted to save so I didn't have to take out any loans in university. Even though I didn't really know that much about student loans and debt and all that stuff, I did know in the back of my mind that debt was bad. My parents were never in debt besides our mortgage, and that was very clear to me that it was something to stay away from. So I tried to do as much as I could to save up, you know, as much cash so I could pay for tuition without taking out any loans, which I am so glad I did. Looking back.
Yeah, it is crazy. I mean, I don't know about Canada, but for us in the States, we're struggling. It's bad right here.
Yeah. No, it's bad here too. I feel like, depending on where you go to school, it might be more expensive in the States, but it's incredible. Like, I think, I can't remember the exact number, but I would say the average student debt burden is $25,000.
Ooh, yeah. You guys are actually right by us. And we're, I think, at 30,000.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, can you imagine leaving school? And it's still not easy to find a job these days when you have a degree and not any real work experience, trying to find your first job. And then you have $25,000, you know, that you have to pay back kind of right away. I mean, sheesh.
Yeah.
Not easy.
No. When you were talking about your story, there's one thing I want to dig into a little bit more because I think it's really interesting. You mentioned that you inherently knew that debt was bad. Why do you view it that way? I'm curious because so many people are very okay with debt. So what made you decide like, no, not for me?
I think there's a couple reasons. I think, you know, one, because my parents, we did live very frugally. So if we couldn't afford something, it was never, oh, well, we're going to take out a loan or put it on the credit card. They never talked like that. They'd be like, well, we can't afford it, so we're not going to do it, or we're going to save up to do it. And so that's how I perceived if you didn't have the money, you didn't have the money. That meant you can do it right now, but you could maybe in the future if you saved up. And there was also this one weird memory I still have being in middle school. I think I was in grade 7. And so I was in French immersion. And so most of my education was in French. And in grade 7, we had this really quirky French teacher. And he told us this story. I feel like he was probably struggling personally and he wanted an outlet to talk. And so he was talking to his students about it. Cause it was I'm like, we didn't have a personal finance class, but he was talking to us about this, but he just told us this story about how it's so, dangerous to rely on debt and credit. He's like, you can really ruin your life. I think he was just going through something and trying to tell us something. And so him being this adult telling these grade, 7 students, it really like stuck in the back of my mind. I'm like, if he's telling us this, we should really pay attention. Like, oh my gosh, I don't want to basically ruin my life by thinking that, oh, I'll just put it on credit and pay it off later. Cause you never know what's going to happen. So that weird story always stuck in the back of my mind. So I'm like, if I can't afford it in cash, I can't afford it and I'm not going to do it.
Oh, I think that's smart because that's the only way you can actually afford what you're paying for and not have that come back to bite you in the ass later, as it always freaking does. I mean, it never fails. And it's this escapism where we try to get more and more to hide something or to feel better about ourselves in some way. And it always catches up. So I'm with you. I appreciate you sharing that.
You're welcome.
with your podcast too, the Mo Money podcast.
Yeah.
What kinds of things can people expect if they were to hop over there and listen to a couple episodes?
Sure. Again, I've had it for 2 years and it's definitely, evolved since I started. Cause I'm like, I'm just going to kind of talk to friends and family, about their stories. So it is very much, kind of similar to yours. It's about finding out people's stories. Cause I feel like that is the most kind of effective way to teach people about, you know, important money lessons. Like, that's how I remember things. It's like the guy, the teacher I had in grade 7 who told us the story about debt. That still, you know, is in my mind now. And so I always wanted to not just have some kind of show that was like, do this, this, and this. It's like, let's learn from someone's experience and stories and find out kind of at the end, what are some like the big lessons that, you know, everyone should take away from. And then hopefully these people will, you know, listening will, you know, leave being like, oh, okay, I think I learned today how important it is to get a will.
Yeah. So, seriously.
Exactly. And so that is kind of the main thing. I interview a bunch of different types of people, you know, authors, bloggers, personal finance experts. But, you know, I started this thing last year where I actually interview some of my listeners. So I get a ton of emails from people saying, oh, I really like this episode. Or they would just tell me their whole story in an email. I'm like, wow, this is fantastic. And I thought that would be a really great thing to showcase to other listeners, you know, listeners listening to other listeners about their real life stories instead of just people that are in the industry. And so I started doing that, and that's been actually really, really cool. And also a great way to find out, you know, what's really going on in regular people's lives that don't think and talk about personal finance all the time. They've got a life outside of that realm.
So when you first started the podcast, I've got to know, were you scared to death of launching it and putting your work out there?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, at the time, even though my podcast, I think, was maybe 3 or 4 years old, it was not a big blog by any means. It was, you know, bigger in maybe Canada. People knew who I was, but it wasn't huge. So it's not like I got a ton of attention. So I'm like, oh, well, if I launch a podcast, I honestly didn't expect too many people to pay attention. So, but I was still terrified because it was like, oh my gosh, this is the first time people are going to hear my voice, how I talk. What if I sound like an idiot? What if people, you know, say negative things? These are all things that are, you know, completely possible. But I still thought, you know, might as well try it out. If I don't like it, I could take it down after a couple months. Or if no one listens, then, you know, whatever. If anything, I'll definitely learn something about, you know, speaking better and how to set up a podcast. You never know. But yeah, I think what's funny is it really is the thing that people know me for. Most people kind of forget that I have a blog or that I've had a blog for so long. It's the podcast that people really pay attention to. So, you know, there's something to be said about doing things that scare you and taking risks, because you never know if that'll be the thing that kind of sets you apart from other people.
It's good advice. I think I was the similar way when I launched the podcast. I was terrified, and I had done YouTube videos and blog posts. So I'm like, why am I so scared of this? It doesn't even make any sense.
I know.
But it was just, it's a different outlet that feels very permanent. So it is a little scary. One thing that I've been thinking about with the podcast on my own personal level is common trends that I've found from interviewing tons of people. Have you found a couple trends where you're like, wow, this is really interesting? This is what separates people that are kicking butt in life from those that are failing. Have you picked up on any of that stuff?
Yeah, I think, you know, a key thing is just having that sheer like determination to fix your situation. I think the people that, you know, they always, you know, you probably have like a, you know, a family member or a friend who, it seems like they're always struggling with their money. And you're like, why can't they just get their stuff together? And usually it's because it's not that they don't have the tools or resources, because most of the time you are probably the friend that's like, I can help you if you need some help. They don't want to be helped, and you can't help people that don't want to help themselves. So I find the people that, you know, I do talk to, that I do like showcase on my listener series, they're the ones that are like, you know what, I am in crazy debt, or I am in, you know, a terrible situation with my money, but I want to get out of it, and they want to help themselves. So it is really, I think, you know, just the people that really have that determination to fix their life. And it's, you know, easier said than done. You know, lots of people would like that, but they're afraid. I think they're really you know, yeah, kind of, just stopped by this pure fear of failure, or, you know, or they just have this, you know, mindset that, no, this is just how things are. I'm broke. I'm poor. That's how my family was. That's how their family was. All the people around me are poor, and that's just how it is.
Ooh, that's some deep stuff too. I think you're spot on. It's like the limiting beliefs that we're taught, or we've just bought into for no reason other than that's just what we were told. Yeah, that's one of the things too with all the guests that I've interviewed. The reason that they are successful is exactly what you said. It's that sheer obsession. They're like, I'm going to make this happen. Do you think that's something that can we cultivate that? Is that inherent? Is it like a natural response? Like how do we, if we want to be better, can we like, I guess, make up determination? Is there a way to get there faster?
I think so. I mean, I think sometimes it can be a natural thing. Like I feel like I've always been like, since I was like a kid, naturally ambitious and curious. Whereas, you know, I've had people, you know, in my family or friends that aren't the same. And I'm kind of like, why do I feel like this? And they don't feel like this. That being said, if you kind of feel like, you know, I wish I had more motivation, but I don't, I think it really does mean you need to take a look at who is in your life. Who do you surround yourself with? And, once you start surrounding yourself with people that do have more motivation and ambition and determination, I feel like that is why I kind of choose the people to be in my life that I do. It's like, there are people that are also trying to do amazing things, that don't make excuses, that just take action. So when you have those people around you, you will automatically feel lifted up and supported because they're also going to be supportive of you and your, hopes and dreams and goals. And so I think that's a kind of a key thing. You need to surround yourself with people that, think kind of similarly to you and that are supportive and positive and want the best for you and are also doing the same thing in their lives.
Mm-hmm. I think that that's super important too. If somebody's trying to get out of the financial debt or just trying to change their financial life so that they have a better story, where in your experience or your suggestions do you think people should start?
I think the first thing that you absolutely need to do is most people that are in kind of a, you know, not great financial situation or have a huge debt burden, it's because they actually don't really know what's going on with their money. They know there's some bad things going on, but they don't know the specifics. So it's time to do an audit of your financial picture, which is never fun. No one likes doing it, but is absolutely key in order to moving forward with your financial life. And it does get easier. So that just means, you know, starting, you know, okay, this month I'm going to track all of my spending for the month. And then, you know, write all that down, put it into like an Excel spreadsheet, then start making a budget. And again, a budget is just a plan for where you're supposed to allocate your money, where you're, you know, how much you're going to save it and for what purpose, how much you're going to spend and what, and for what purpose. And then also taking a look at what your net worth is. What are all of your assets? What are all of your liabilities? So really it's like, those are the kind of the three cornerstones: making a budget, tracking your spending and tracking your net worth. And then once you have all those numbers written down in a spreadsheet that you can take a look at, you're like, oh, I have an idea of where I'm going. You can easily pinpoint the problem areas specifically with your spending. And then as you, you know, try to spend as per your budget, then you will start to see some progress, especially when you also continue to track your net worth. So you just kind of, you know, make an audit and then continue to track it every single month. And that is kind of just like, it's not that complicated. It is a little bit of work at the beginning when you're kind of starting from scratch. But once you do it, it's very motivating. Like me, I still do that. Me and my husband have monthly money meetings. That's go over cool. our spending. Yeah. And it's not, I mean, I think he likes it now, but at the beginning, he definitely didn't like it. I mean, it's not fun to look at, you know, what have you been spending all of your money on and what's your net worth like, but, you know, once you do it for a long period of time, it's really cool to see, oh wow, we started from here and a year from now, look at our net worth. We're up by this much. That's exciting. That means we're making progress in our life.
For the net worth piece, do you calculate your house as an asset in your calculations or do you leave that off? I know that's like total nerd debate, but.
Yeah. So I do include that as an asset, but then I, subtract what we still owe on it. So, now for ours and, you know, yeah, people have different ways of doing this, but for ours, we basically don't get a new kind of report on how much is still left on our mortgage until a year has passed. So we only get a year update. That's just like how it is with our, you know, mortgage provider. So for the whole year, I basically haven't, changed, you know, what the asset is valued at and how much we owe. So when we get that new report and also the new report on how much our house is, valued at, then I will kind of change some of the numbers. But yeah, I do, put that in our net worth, but I also include how much we still owe on it.
Yeah. I think that's the key piece. And I've had so much, I do the same thing. And I've had so much pushback on, well, you shouldn't include that. That's not really an asset. I'm like, oh my God.
I'm like, are you kidding? I'm like, well, I mean, it depends. I'm like, in Canada, it freaking is an asset. I'll tell you. I mean, housing is crazy here. The amount that housing goes up, I'm pretty sure. And what's kind of interesting, just being a new homeowner, we've owned our place for about a year now, is I know for a fact we got our place for a very good price. And I'm thankful. I'm so thankful that we found it. It was just like good timing. But there's other townhouses in our complex that have been up for sale, identical to ours. And we get to see the prices that they're listed for. And I'm like, I think our house has definitely gone up in value by quite a bit. So yes, I'm going to put that in my net worth. Yeah. If we were to sell today, we would make money. Just say.
Okay. So let's say hypothetically you did sell today and you've got a ton of money. What would you do?
Oh gosh, Lord. I don't know. I mean, I always kind of like, and sometimes we even talk about this, like and a big reason why we bought this place was because, if we were, decide to move somewhere else, we could easily rent it out. So I don't know if we'd actually sell it just because it's a good location, good property in Toronto. But say we did decide to sell and had a bunch of money, what would we do? Oh, I don't know. I'd be boring and invest it. Like, you know, like I'd probably buy an investment property. Like and that's kind of the good thing with me and my husband. We're definitely on the same page financially. So it's nice. It's easy to work with someone who has, you know, is also kind of naturally frugal and doesn't like spending, but has like the idea of let's grow our wealth now so we can enjoy it later on.
Have you guys always been on the same page?
Pretty much. I mean, in general, I am the saver. He's the spender. But when I say spender, I mean, he's like the stuff he spends his money on really is more just business expenses. Like cause he's a self-employed, audio engineer. And so he's been doing that for the past 10 years. So, you know, when you're in that business, you do have to buy gear, which means, you know, expensive, you know, stereo equipment or amps. And I don't even know what most of the stuff is, quite honestly, but I know it's pricey. But I also know, and this is kind of a you know, testament to how like money conscious he is. If he does buy a new piece of gear, he'll sell an old piece of gear. So it won't be just like he has all this stuff in his room. He, you know, makes sure to kind of sell it. So he actually does kind of, most of the time he'll sell sometimes, he'll keep a piece of gear for like 3 years and sell it for the same price that he bought it for, because also gear, you know, in this, that kind of particular industry, it doesn't generally devalue. So sometimes it's like, so he basically rented that thing for free.
That's sweet.
I know. It's actually pretty smart.
Did you guys meet in school?
No, funny enough, we met through a friend. We met on a like New Year's Eve party. I was in university. I think I was in second year and he just finished his audio school. And, I think at the time he was working at this terrible factory. He hated it so much. It had something to do with packaging something, but it was just like something he did while he was in school. So he was in his transitional phase, before he got his job at a studio in Vancouver. But yeah, we met at a party.
That is so cute. And then how long have you guys been married now?
We've been married for 4 years, together for 10.
Nice.
So we kind of grew up together. Yeah. I was 20. He was 21 when we got together. So a lot has changed.
That's
but
so
it's
cool.
Been kind of cool to have someone to go through all of that, you know, your 20s with, to really go through all those transitional things. I mean, I've gone back to school several times, switched careers several times. We've moved together. You know, a lot of things have changed, but yeah.
That is fun.
He's a good one. I like him.
It's always good to, I think when you're on the same page with your significant other on money, yeah. That's when it, I mean, you changes can start every, seeing big progress. Mm-hmm. Do you have any tips if someone's listening in? Because I know this is so common for a lot of people where they just cannot get on the same page. They're just totally butting heads. Do you have any like tips or like soft suggestions that they could try?
Absolutely. I think there's nothing wrong with you thinking about money and handling your money differently than your partner. I think the key thing is really, having those joint goals. Mm-hmm. You know, so how we kind of structure, and again, everyone's different. So you really need to figure out what makes the most sense for you and your partner is, we are not one of those couples, even though we've been married for a while and do have joint assets. We don't pool all of our money together. That is something we'll never do. It will never work. We like our independence. And that's just how it is. We'll just never pool all of our money together. So we kind of do a separate but together situation. So, you know, we both make our own money. But we have our joint fixed and variable expenses. We calculate how much we're, you know, the percentage that we're both going to kind of put into that pot to cover those expenses. And then the rest of our money is separate. So I've got my separate, you know, savings accounts and investments, and so does he. But then we also have, besides our joint expenses, we also have joint savings goals. So for instance, travel, we both have travel funds because we usually travel together. Or, you know, when we're going to buy this place, we started also having a joint account to save for a down payment. So what we found, even though we do kind of deal with money differently and think about it differently, and it's, you know, I never wanted to push him to be like super frugal and you know, crazy like I am. I think what's really helped is getting on the same page about, well, what are our joint goals? What do we want to achieve together? And I think that's something that anyone, no matter who you're with, can kind of understand. And also, I think another key thing is making your partner feel like they are also really part of the equation. I don't think it's ever good to be like, oh, I'll handle the finances and I'll just tell you what to do. That's why I really did, you know, make an effort, you know, probably he wasn't super excited about it, but now he is. It's like, we really do need to meet on the monthly to talk, to really look at all of our spending, joint and individual, take a look at our net worth. So we both know exactly what's going on. Cause once you both know what's going on, you both feel empowered and excited to kind of move forward and keep being good with your money.
Yeah. I mean, spot on too. That's one of the things that I hear so consistently is, oh, my husband, my wife, my boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever, they're better with the finances. So that's just, I let them do that all. Mm-hmm. What the hell? Like, why would you put that? That's a lot of work too on just one person.
Yeah. And also it's a lot of pressure and that's where our kind of issues arise. They may feel resentment because they're doing a lot more work when it comes to their finances, or they may want your opinion on making some kind of financial decision. You're like, oh, you know, it's up to you. And then again, they'll be like, well, actually, I'm not sure. I would like your opinion. It's like, you do have to go. If you're in a partnership, you really, finances is part of it. You need to get together and talk about it together. I mean, you're both earning money. You're both spending money. So you need to know exactly what's going on with both of your money and not leave it up to one of your partners just because they're good at money. Oh, please. Everyone can be good at their money. It's not something you're born with. It's something that it's definitely a thing that you learn.
Oh yeah, I totally agree. I'm curious from like a cultural difference perspective. So between Canada and the States, like what kinds of issues is Canada dealing with on the financial outlook?
I'd say they're probably similar to the States. I mean, you know, in general, the biggest issues people are dealing with is, you know, either student debt or consumer debt. It's, you know, especially even us millennials, I know, we kind of do, we get a lot of flack for being, you know, the me generation, all that kind of stuff, which I can't stand. But in general, it's like, I feel like we have had kind of some hard luck. Lots of us, you know, myself included, graduated university during the recession. So it was impossible to find a job. And luckily, I didn't have that much student debt. I had a $5,000 student loan, and that was it. But most people graduated with $25,000, and then they couldn't find a job. So they had to continue living at home, and then maybe got a job at Starbucks to have some kind of income coming in. And then it really kind of, you know, slowed down their progress in life and their career, which is frustrating. And so not only do lots of us, you know, still not earn as much as, you know, say our parents did at our age, we also have a lot of debt, and also things are way freaking more expensive, especially in Canada. I think the big issue is housing is so expensive. If you want to live in a major city like Vancouver or Toronto, I mean, you need $1 million to buy a house. $1 million. And I'm not talking a mansion. I mean, like, there's this website. I don't know if it still exists, but it probably does, but it's called Crack House or Mansion. And it was like this kind of joke website, but it was actually sadly true. Whereas you click and you choose whether this house is either a crack house or a mansion. And most of the time it was a mansion that was $1 million.
What?
Yeah, I will send you the link because it's so funny. But it's just like there's not a lot of housing available, and what is available is very expensive. So most people also, you know, if you want to own a property, you're going to have to move out of the city. You can't, because there's just no way you can afford $1 million at, you know, 30 years old. No,
God,
that's
no.
Crazy.
I know. It sounds very much like California for us, where everything is just way inflated. So they all moved to Idaho, where I live. And now our housing prices are slowly climbing. I'm like, oh, crap.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
It's just so insane. Funny. I know. I'm going to check that out. So crackhouseormansion.com.
Yeah, I'm sure it's something like that. I'll send you the link. I don't know if that's hilarious. The exact, but it's like funny but sad, because you're like, oh my gosh, I couldn't even afford that house that looks like it's going to fall down.
Yeah, sad. That's awful.
It is sad. It is. So just this whole idea that we kind of grew up with, that we would be able to kind of do what our parents did, which was to buy a house, to get married, to have kids, have a yard. It's not possible. It really, unless you really want to move like 1 or 2 hours outside of the city. And guess what? There's no jobs there. So you're either going to have to figure out a different career, or you're going to have to commute 1 to 2 hours per day, twice a day.
Yeah, no, that's kind of a shitty option.
Kind of, yeah.
But you can listen to podcasts and you can learn a lot.
But I'm sure that'll get old after a little while, right?
Oh, yeah, totally. That sucks. So let's talk a little bit about your business and like what's going on with your business. What direction are you going in the future? What projects are you most excited about?
Yeah. So yeah, as I kind of mentioned, I have a varied past with a career. So I started working at 15, but then I thought I wanted to be a filmmaker. So I went to film school, got a degree in film production, which I loved. Decided to switch gears because I didn't really want to be a starving artist all my life, and started working in sales and marketing. And that's what I did for most of my career. But yeah, recently, I guess in the past couple of years, I decided, you know, I think my real passion, my calling is personal finance and helping people. I just feel so fulfilled, so happy to help people that really just need a boost. And I love talking about money. So in January, I quit my 9-to-5 to work for myself. And so currently, I guess when people say, what do you do? It's kind of a complicated situation, but I guess like the term would be, I'm an influencer right now. I have a blog and a podcast and a personal brand. I do speaking and stuff like that. But the, kind of two things on the horizon is, first, you know, I have a, online course that I launched, in June with my, business partner and pal, Jacqueline Phillips. She is a fitness coach and a yoga instructor and a champion bodybuilder. Like she knows what she's doing with her fitness. And so I've always been really interested in like getting better at fitness and losing weight, just because I've always been kind of a yo-yo, you know, dieter and stuff like that. And we used to work together. That's how we kind of connected. And so one day we were talking, you know, when we're both working late, and she was telling me that that's what she did on the side. And I'm like, oh, I actually do personal finance on the side. And she's like, you know, I really want to learn about how to deal with my money better, because I really don't know what I'm doing. And so we started talking and realized there were so many similarities and parallels between fitness and finance, which people normally wouldn't think about. And so, since then we have, you know, come together and launched our Rich and Fit Bootcamp, which is a 7-week, fitness and finance, online course, where you learn the foundational steps of, getting your financial life right. And also, you know, having a really healthy meal plan, working out consistently. So at the end you can be, you know, quote unquote, rich and fit.
And who doesn't want that?
Who doesn't want that? Exactly. And so, yeah, we launched that in, June to a number of students and then kind of closed the doors. We're going to launch again, end of September. And then once again, before the new year. So we'll probably, announce those dates in December.
So if somebody wants to join in that, how do they find it? What's the best place to go?
Yeah, I'd say the best way to find out when all that information is available is going to my website, jessicamorehouse.com. Also richandfitbootcamp.com. If there's either a landing page that'll say, you know, registration's closed, but sign up to our list to find out when it opens, or, when you land there, then there'll be more information about, our next launch. So yeah, so I've got that in the queue, which I'm excited about, just because not only did we create this course, but we also did the course ourselves. So she did the financial portion, I did the fitness portion, and I actually have, like, because one of my goals for the year was to get in the best shape of my life. which is a big goal. And I've actually, you know, completed our first course in all of the workouts and changed my whole, you know, diet and meal plan. And yeah, I mean, it works. It's not easy.
No.
We don't say it's easy, but it is effective.
Your progress pictures have been so inspirational too. I've been following your journey. I'm like, damn girl, you're killing it. Like, you look amazing. You really do.
Thank you. I feel really good. Like, it's one of those things where it's, you know, you always kind of like, oh, I wish I could lose 5 pounds. It's really not even about that, because I don't even, you know, I take my measurements and weigh myself, but it's not even about that. It's really just about, oh my gosh, I can see my body change. There's lumps that aren't there anymore. And there's jeans I can fit into it again. And I just actually feel more positive about my body, which is huge, because I'm like most women, super critical about my body. Yeah. So it's nice to feel because it's not about getting skinny. It's really just about getting strong. And that's the really empowering part. It's like, oh my gosh, I can lift things I never could. I could do push-ups. My gosh, I never was able to do regular push-ups before. So I could do burpees without killing myself.
Oh God, so, I'm still working on that.
Yeah. Burpees are hard. But once you kind of, it's exciting getting stronger and, you know, doing workouts that you couldn't do before and now you could do them. You're like, oh my gosh, that's exciting.
That's so cool. So, I love the confidence boost part too. I think that's the fun part.
It really is about like empowering people to have the best life that they can. And it's hard work, but it's not impossible. Like anyone can
finish. I love that too. And I'm definitely going to have to check that out. So for you guys listening, that's going to be linked in the show notes. So make sure if you want to be rich and fit, you go check that out too, because I think that's a really cool course and a really fun way to combine two of our biggest goals in one course. It's a really good way to go. So if someone's listening in and they are loving you and want to work directly with you, can they do that?
Yeah. So, very soon I will be, launching the financial counseling, service that I've been really excited about. So currently I've got a few private, clients, but, I will be kind of opening it up to the public, in the fall. So again, just go to my, website, and sign up to my email list. That's definitely where you'll find out all the details about that, which is just jessicamorehouse.com/subscribe.
Love it. Jess, let's start wrapping it up. But is there any final thoughts or little tidbits of wisdom you want to impart with our listeners before we part ways?
Absolutely. So I guess kind of my whole reason d'etre, I guess, is just I want to really drive home the message that, you know, once you really do take control of your money, you can take control of your life. And I think so many times in our lives, we feel like we don't have a handle on things, or things are just, you know, going in every single direction and we're just not okay with that. I think a big element really is figuring out your financial situation and getting that, locked down, and also dealing with your finances and, you know, being smart with your money. It really doesn't take up that much of your life. Like, it's not, you don't have to be this crazy personal finance blogger that is talking about it all the time. We really, like, especially when it comes to like, just, you know, doing your budget and your tracking of your spending and your net worth, that shouldn't take you more than a couple hours per month, and then you could live your life. And that's the exciting part. You could just live your life, but have that kind of security in the back of your mind that you know that you're set up and you're okay. And that's kind of the exciting, you know, empowering part of personal finance.
Oh, this was so fun. It was so awesome to hear your story of going from 15 years old and working at Gap. to where you are today.
During Christmas time. It was terrible. It was terrible. Hellish. It wasn't great.
It really questioned your faith in humanity when you work in retail.
I know. Oh my gosh. And I've done it all. Oh my gosh. I used to work at Blockbuster. RIP Blockbuster.
Oh my God. Yeah.
I know. That was a while ago.
I think my first job was a snow cone shack.
Amazing.
Sling snow cones. Actually, it was really fun because I got to eat free ones all my life. And it was pretty awesome. I was like 13 and begged them for a job.
Oh yeah. That sounds like a dream job. That sounds amazing.
It's pretty great. I got some good flavors. So if you ever need any suggestions,
you know,
this is so fun. Okay guys. So make sure you go check out jessicamorehouse.com. All linked in the show notes. Jess, I appreciate your time. It was so fun chatting with you.
Same here. Thanks for having me. It was fun.
All right. What'd you guys think? I love this interview with Jessica. It was so much fun to learn about how she got started into personal finance and how she even manages her money today. I thought that was really cool. One of the things that I really appreciated too was her quote when she said, "Take control of your money to take control of your life." that really hit me because so many of us are living unintentional financial lives. And it needs to stop. If you want to have control of your life and you want to feel like you're empowered and you can actually do all these really cool things with your money, you have to take control of it. And that will trickle into a feeling more in control of your entire life. Dang, that was deep stuff. It really hit me. I hope it had the same impact on you. And if not, I hope something from this episode did. I'd love to hear what that was for you. So you could either post it in the Facebook group, or you can send me an email, or even leave it as a review on iTunes or Stitcher or SoundCloud or wherever you listen to podcasts. It means the world to hear from you and to see that this stuff is really resonating and helping you along with your journey as well. All right, guys, that's it for today. Thank you so much for listening, and I will see you next week for another episode of the Money Nerds Podcast. See ya.